Go behind the wheel and under the hood on everything automotive with high-speed stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Howdy do, everybody, and welcome back to the podcast. I'm Scott Benjamin, the auto editor here at HowStuffWorks.com.
And my name is Ben Bullen. I'm a video writer here at HowStuffWorks, and I'm hanging out, as always, with one of my favorite people.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, you're talking about me, right?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, Liz is here, too.
Yeah.
And we wanted to take a second out, not to be selfish to our listeners who are outside of Georgia, but there's been a very interesting development in local Georgia laws.
Well,
and it may just apply to everyone eventually.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it?
Well, that's the thing. Like, I kind of struggled over this one a little bit.
Yeah.
Because should we do this or not? Because we go around the world, really. Mm-hmm. And we have a huge United States listener base.
Mm-hmm.
There is a new super speeder law in Georgia that's what it's called, the new super speeder law. And it's pretty strict. It's pretty strict. And we'll find out why it's important to everybody else soon, because it really is. I mean, stay focused on this one, because there's something coming up that, you know, maybe things, angles that you hadn't really thought about. But
we're throwing some curves.
Yeah, this right now is just in Georgia, and it's called House Bill 160. And House Bill 160 began January 1st, 2010, so it's very recent. And what this does is it adds $200 to a speeding ticket if you are ticketed at speeding over 75 or more on any two-lane road in Georgia,
mm-hmm.
or if you're ticketed for traveling at 85 miles per hour or more anywhere in Georgia on any road.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going over 85 anywhere in Georgia, you get this additional $200 fine.
Should the car dealers even have speedometers that go above 85 at this point?
Yeah, I think. Well, you know what? I'll be honest. This has only been around for a couple weeks now.
Mm-hmm.
I've consciously been watching my speed to make sure that I'm not traveling above 85 on the freeways.
Oh, because, me too, man.
Well, I mean, that sounds kind of crazy to some people, but we travel pretty quickly on the highways around here.
Sure.
Michigan was the same way when I lived there, and I'm sure that it's the same way elsewhere. You know, the left lane is 85 and up. It's not it's not unusual to see somebody traveling 85 miles per hour. Hopefully, well, the idea is that this will get people to back it off a little bit.
Sure.
With the increased fine. It's not, and it's a state fee. It's not you know, $200 and you're done. It's $200 in addition to.
Yes.
Oh, you're going to point that out, right? Yeah. But do you
I'm
know
just agreeing.
There's oh, you are. Okay.
I'm just agreeing with you.
There's more to it than this. If you don't pay this, let's say I'm not paying that super speeder fee because that's just they're trying to generate revenue.
Mm-hmm,
if you don't pay it, there's like a 90-day period where they allow you to pay it, and I think it's 90 days, a grace period. And they allow you to pay that $200 because they feel that that's sufficient time to be able to make that money to pay it. If you don't pay it, your license is suspended. Suspended. And then when you reinstate, when you try to reinstate your license, when you try to apply for it, after you pay the $200 eventually, there's another $50 fee that they tack onto that.
The reinstatement fee.
The reinstatement fee. So it gets more expensive, so you're better off just paying it and be done with it.
Mm-hmm. And the immediate question is one of motive.
Mm-hmm.
And let's be honest here. Mm-hmm. Of course, this does have a chance of reducing high-speed accidents.
Of course.
It does. Because, you know, people like money and they like to have it, and we all get our feelings hurt a little when we have to let go of it.
Of course.
Or at least me. And
so they call it a penalty.
That's why they call it a penalty and not a reward.
Yeah.
And there's another side to this, though, if we can paint a brief picture. As everybody knows, regardless of where you live, there has been a recent economic downturn, pretty rough in the United States, and it's left a lot of state governments and even our federal government in a lurch. And so a lot of people think that this kind of law is this kind of imposition of fees is really meant just more as a revenue stream for the government rather than a safety issue. And, you know, it's an interesting question, because what's the one thing that's political suicide if you're a politician, Scott? Raising taxes.
I'm shaking my head. I don't know where you're going at this
point. Oh, yeah, yeah.
There's a few directions you could go with it. Mm-hmm. But, okay, so raising taxes. You think that, you think instead of raising taxes, they're doing this just to get money from a group of people that they know they can target right now, who are the speed, because we do drive quick.
Sure.
We do drive fast here. So you're thinking that this is just a revenue generator.
I'm saying that that's something we need to bring up because it is a possibility that people have talked about. Personally, I think it is fair to say it might be a two birds with one stone kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
safer, but it is also revenue.
It's expected to drop, actually, after the first year. They're going to make a lot of money on this the first year. Mm-hmm. The next year, they're hoping that it goes down. And I say that, you know, I don't know. I'm cautious about saying that. But
right.
the idea is that next year they will make less money on it, and the following year less money on it, and the following year less, because people will finally get it driven through their head that, you know, that this is going to cost me.
Mm-hmm.
I can't continue to speed like this because it's costing me $500 a year, an extra $600 a year. I don't know what that would do with your points or whatever. But
oh, yeah, it does. I think it really dovetails well because that shows that there is a sincere motive.
Yeah.
I think that's fair to say.
Well, I've got some crash statistics here. From 2008, because, you know, they always do these things a year behind.
Yep.
So soon we'll get 2009 numbers, but the recent crash facts, or what this is called, is the why behind the law.
Okay.
This was right from the site, the superspeedergeorgia.org site. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you that again later, but in 2000, these are 2008 numbers again. And in 2008, the number of speed fatalities, that is, where speed was a factor in the fatality within Georgia's borders, 309 people died just because of speed fatalities on the road. The total number of fatalities was something like 1,493. So you can see that, you know, the speed, the ones that speeding is attributed to, 309, that's pretty significant. That is not quite one a day here in Georgia on average. So not a good average, really.
Not a good
average. And hopefully they're going to try to bring that down. And by doing this, they're going to compare the 2008 numbers. Of course, 2009 numbers will not have this data again, so it may be just as high as 2008. And then they're going to see if they can get that number to come down. It's sort of like the idea is, and I've heard this thrown around too, is that this will do for speeding what MAD did for drunk driving.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, the MAD organizations and, you know, all those that have reduced the amount of drunk driving that's going on, you know, because those numbers have dropped significantly, I know. I don't
and
have facts
those,
in front of me.
To those unfamiliar, MAD is an acronym, which means Mothers Against Drunk Driving.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm sorry, I didn't clarify but they're hoping that this will do the same thing, that it'll just reduce year after year the number of people that are involved in these speed fatalities.
And another point that proves that, I don't know, I won't say proves the sincerity, but is strong circumstantial evidence for it. Scott, you know where this money's going?
I do know where it's going. It's going to a very good cause, actually,
mm-hmm.
and there's a good reason behind this as well. All of the money that they raised from this, and they're expecting now from the press release, they've got a number that is a little lower than what I've heard. They're expecting that this first year in Georgia alone, remember, $200 at a time, they're expecting $23 million in increased revenue from this.
I heard around there. I think I'd heard 25 or something.
Yeah, I heard 25. I've heard as much as 30 or even 35 million.
Huh.
$200 at a time. And the money goes to, what does it go to? It goes to the
Georgia Trauma.
Yeah, the Georgia Trauma Centers, or the system, the Georgia Trauma System. And, again, that's the people that end up taking care of the people that are in these accidents. And they said that as many as 60% of the trauma patients are caused by these speeding accidents, you know, the ones that end up in the hospital, not just the fatalities that I mentioned before, of course, those don't end up in the trauma. Well, maybe they do for a certain amount of time until they pass away. But the number of speed injuries in Georgia was a little more than 9,500 last year.
9,500.
In 2008 alone, 9,566 speed-related injuries.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, a lot of those end up in these trauma hospitals. So the speeders are now going to be paying for the care of the people that, you know, are, I guess, you know, injured by the speeders, really.
Right.
You know, the careless ones that are...
Or by the practice of speeding.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly.
Now, let's throw that curb we were talking about earlier, because let's say I'm listening and I live in Virginia, mm-hmm. I live in Montana, I'm thinking, hey guys, like the show, why are you telling me about this? I don't even drive in Atlanta.
Well, here's the thing. The thing is that you can be ticketed for the same thing if you're passing through Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Georgia is a pass-through state. I mean, a lot of people coming headed down to Florida, mm-hmm. From Michigan, Minnesota, you know, wherever. They're headed down near Tennessee, Kentucky. They're headed down this way. They're going to pass right through Georgia to get to Florida. So a lot of people are going to get this, get hit with this on their way to vacation or back from vacation. Here's probably the biggest reason, though. This is a test. And this test is something that they're going to be carefully observing in other states. And if it works, it's going to spread. It's going to pass to other states. Mm-hmm. So if it works here in Georgia, which I assume it probably will, they'll gain a lot. They're going to gain, you know, $30 million in revenue is what they're expecting.
Mm-hmm.
What state do you think is not going to jump on that bandwagon and say, yeah, we don't need $30 million in revenue. Let's just let our speeders slide on this one.
I feel like that's a rhetorical question.
It is, yeah, okay. because they're going to want that, you know, just
sure.
I hate to say it, but they're going to want it for no other reason than just to, you know, to be able to gain that money. But,
and plus, saving lives
and
is also important.
Hopefully, after a couple of years, they'll find out that this does save lives, and that's the good reason that, you know, this will be passed. But a lot of people should be on the lookout for something like this coming their way because it just may happen.
And depending upon how this situation in Georgia works out, perhaps it is completely possible that another state, since this is a state law, another state could make a different fee. The fee is entirely arbitrary.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
It could be as little as $50 extra. It could be as much as $400.
Yeah, it could be $1,000. It could be anything
Yeah.
It could be anything that they want to put on this on the bill, on the act. So, just watch out for it. I mean, I don't mean to be a naysayer about this thing. I'm just saying that, you know, if it has potential to save lives, great. If it's reducing speeding on the highways, making people safer, that's wonderful. But I also see it as maybe, you know, a chance for, you know, state governments to make quite a bit of money, and I think that it's going to catch on.
And just to close out, to take it just a little bit bigger, international listeners, don't think that, especially if you live in Western Europe, don't make the mistake of thinking that none of your legislators are paying attention to this sort of lawmaking.
Yeah, it may already be in place somewhere else that we just don't
sure,
know.
We're not
about
sure. Yeah,
this just happens to be the first state in the United States involved in this, and like I said, it's a test, so we'll see.
We'll see how it goes. You know what else I'd like to see?
What?
Listener mail.
Okay, Ben. Here we got one. Just got one piece of listener mail today,
and
This goes back a ways. This goes back to our survival kit discussion.
Oh, yes.
About, when was that? September?
That was a while back.
I think it was September. Anyways, Dan and Sarah actually wrote in about this. Dan wrote in, copied his girlfriend, Sarah. Says that they live in Boston. Yeah, because they said they went on their annual road trip from Boston to Quebec for skiing. And they listened to the High Speed Stuff podcast on the way, and introduced her to it. She loves it as well. Says that he was a Boy Scout, so he's always trying to be prepared. You know, like we've mentioned in that, right?
Yeah.
And he says, here's my question. He on the way, drives through some very uninhabitable, you know, sparsely populated areas along the way. And, you know, so the need for the survival kit, which he takes, is important. Never had to use it, though, which is good.
That's good.
But he does have a question. He says, we bring water and other beverages, but remove them when they're in Quebec, and they don't have to leave them in the car all winter because they'll freeze.
Yes.
So that's one thing that we had mentioned, is that you bring water with you on the trip. What do you do when you're dealing with these Arctic or subarctic temperatures? And you know, how do you keep it from freezing up? And because, you know, you put it in a bottle or something, it's going to expand and blow the top off the bottle, or blow out the sides of the bottle and make a mess. It says it's easy to do on a road trip. That's fine. You know, a short trip, and you can take it out and, you know, keep it warm. But what do you do for a car survival kit where you have to leave it in the car all winter long? So I thought that was a good question.
That's
an excellent
question.
Do you have any shot at this? Because I got a couple of just marginal
ideas. Yeah, a couple of ideas. Okay, well, I don't want to steal any of your ideas because I'm just speculating here. My friends who live in the north, in their car survival kits, they often have some sort of heating element, which we've talked about before. And when it sounds like this is a two-part question. It sounds like the first part is how to store it practically.
Yes.
And it sounds like the second part of the question is how to then get it into a usable form, because it probably will freeze.
Yeah.
And so it seems like the easiest answer is a heating element, but also that's probably not the most practical. Mm-hmm. So what do you think, Scott?
Well, a heating element, that's part of your kit already to begin with, because right. you've got a candle and match and you know, something like that, road flare, whatever, mm-hmm. something you can burn, heat in a cup or heat in a can or whatever they call stuff, that sterno heat.
Yeah.
So if that's possible and if there's snow available, you can melt snow
right.
and make drinking water that way. If there's no snow available and it's really, really cold, just drink pure alcohol and nothing else because that won't freeze. That's not my answer. That's not my answer. That's terrible advice. No, don't drink alcohol. That's a bad idea. But it wouldn't freeze, so just take that whenever. Now here's my. This is going to sound absolutely ridiculous. Okay. It is going to sound ridiculous. It's going to be. It's very marginal advice. Okay.
All right. Let's.
So with that understood, and remember, you're only talking about just surviving at this point. It's just getting. It's not. I don't care about nutritional value at this point.
Right.
There's packs of water that we learned about.
Yes.
Packs of water would work. Mm-hmm. You could have them in packs of water, and that wouldn't freeze to the point where it would blow out the pack.
Right. When they freeze, the bag would just expand a bit.
The bag would be a solid block of ice, though. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's not great to chew on a block of ice, but you would be able to get water from that.
Yes.
Okay. Because I think I'll get around to it here, don't worry. But I think if you brought it in, let's say, a 2-liter bottle or something, or a gallon jug. Let's say you bring a gallon jug. It's frozen solid. It's got that little nozzle at the top, you know, that little cap.
Yeah.
You're not going to get anything out of that until you melt it, right?
Right.
And that's the problem, is trying to melt it and get it out. Here's my Marshall advice.
All right.
Not only the packets of water, which would work, because you could still open the packet and it would expose the entire thing. You could eat that and survive, I guess. I didn't think about this for very long, as you'll notice. You know those flavor ice popsicle things?
Yes.
You know the clear plastic and they're real narrow?
Yeah.
But they're flavored. They're like, you know, strawberry, whatever, fruit juice sometimes?
Yeah.
I can't even believe I'm saying this as an example, but you could, if you wanted to, just throw a couple of those in the pack. Not only does it have sugar, you know, that you'd probably need to keep your energy up, you know, calories, just intake. It's also probably mostly water, if I had to guess. Right?
Yeah, probably.
It's like mostly water. It's enough to keep
70%.
It's enough to keep you alive, right?
Right.
If they could freeze and it wouldn't expand to the point where it'd blow past that expansion. You know, they're meant to be frozen, so it's not going to explode in the back in your, uh-huh. your kit and get everything else wet. You know, matches, whatever you might have in there, batteries. So it would be safe to keep these in there. You could keep them year round if you wanted to. I'm sure there's probably a limit on that time.
Sure.
But you could drink them if they're not frozen. You could eat them if they are frozen, and you're able to get to them.
Okay.
It's a terrible solution. It probably is awful, and I know that, you know, that's not the greatest, but it's something.
Well, you know what? It's not the worst. I think you're beating yourself up a little here, Scott. It depends on what kind you get, because there are some that have a sweetener, high fructose corn syrup, and then there's some that have cane sugar, and you probably want the ones with sugar, honestly.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And then, you know, we're assuming that whoever has done this has already been a good boy or girl scout. And had some other form of non-perishable food.
Yeah, I mean, of course you want to have water. You need plenty of it. Mm-hmm. But I'm saying in a pinch, something like that, if you had a dozen of those in the back,
yeah.
What harm does it? I mean, it takes up very little space. They're very, very small. At least that's something that, you know, if you have the hope of within, you know, a day being out of there, you can throw it in a backpack and take it with you.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy, but it's a fluid. Mm-hmm. It's mostly water.
It's non-alcoholic.
It's non-alcoholic. And you don't have to worry about, you know, it exploding and, you know, losing your source of fluid.
Right.
I don't know. It's kind of a crazy idea, but I think it may actually work. And if they made water in tubes like that, they do make packets.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be the same idea. You could eat the water like you would a popsicle, and you get the same benefits from that. So maybe the packets are a good idea, but those are large. You know, they're bigger.
Right. And then some biker equipment, like bicyclist equipment, or cyclist, excuse me. We're going to get some emails for that one. Some cyclists do have these almost like fanny pack lower back things that contain water in a way that can also keep it cool.
Hmm.
And so I think that kind of container might be a good resource. It sounds like what we're saying, Dan and Sarah as well, is it sounds like what we're trying to get at is it's okay for the water to freeze ultimately. Because if you're talking about survival, you won't be able to drink it quickly, but if you can somehow get a heating element in there and somehow get a container that won't go nuts on you, then it might
well,
be your best interest.
If you have a plastic container like a gallon jug, you're not going to be able to put that on a fire, though.
Right.
So you need to be able to get that. See, that's a problem. If you have a gallon jug, it's frozen solid. You got a black light. So what? You know what I would do?
What?
I would cut away the container, and I would use my Snoopy snow cone machine, and I would make snow cones for everybody inside.
Yeah.
And that way you could. I'm just kidding. You can't carry a Snoopy snow cone.
Dude, I was about to high five you.
Oh, yeah. Don't you carry a Snoopy snow cone maker with you everywhere you go in the wintertime?
Obviously, you've been looking through my backpack.
So, anyways, that's about as crazy as my as my flavor ice popsicle thing. But I don't know. Just trying to.
Just take it in a container that you can heat it in.
Well, you know what? The packets would work.
The packets would work because they're foil.
Yeah, they're expensive, but again, they have a longer shelf life than bottled water does too. So, double bam.
Yeah, double bam. Yeah. And on that note, any listeners out there, if you guys have some ideas that could help out Dan and Sarah with keeping the water from freezing in a survival kit.
Better ideas than flavor ice popsicles.
Or even more off the wall. We'd love to hear from you. And our email address, as always, is
highspeedstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com. And be sure to check out the new High Speed Stuff blog, now on the How Stuff Works homepage.